We begin the current daf, Mesach, the site, the daf Vav. We begin in the top line of the Yamad, where the Gemara continues the discussion with the previous daf. That is, our Gemara quoted from the Mishnah that said that if the Suffolk Saita, if her husband dies before he gets a chance to give her to drink from the May Saita, then the halacha is that although he died without any children and is in the midst of Yibim, his brother should do only Chalitza and not Yibim. Now, that the Gemara's question was, why is it that he can't do Yibim? So Rav Yosef had answered based on the pasuk that talks about the unfaithful wife. Says that v'yatzami beisai, that he's going to send her away from his house. V'holcha v'hoisa l'shachin, and she's going to go ahead and marry someone else. Which we had two different versions so far of what Rav Yosef had interpreted from that pasuk, and the bias questions on Rav Yosef. Now that the Gemara continues with a third version of this interpretation of Rav Yosef from this pasuk to answer why is it that he has to do chalitza but he doesn't do yibam. And Abaye's question on that. So the Ikud Amri, there are those that say a third version. That Amr Rav Yosef said, based on that pasuk, that Hakasav Karoi Acher, the pasuk calls, when this man has an unfaithful wife and he divorces her, sends her away, the one who marries her, it's called someone else, like Acher, some other type of thing. Where what that means to say is, She'ein ben zugei shel rishon, he's different. He's someone else. He's not the same character as the first husband, because Shazeh Hoitzi Rishon Mebeisai, the first husband, sent away this wicked woman out of his house. Vizeh, and this other guy, he's Hiknes Rishon Letech Beis. He goes and he marries this wicked, unfaithful woman. So that's why the Pasuk Rav Yosef says, calls him, that she leaves his house, V'holcha V'yislesh Acher, to another, a different type of character, type of a guy. Now that Rav Yosef says, Fa'at Amr Tisyab Nami Yevume, and you want to say that the brother of the first husband should have to go ahead and do Yibum? How could we force him? Yibum is a requirement that when his brother dies, without any children, has to do Yibum. So therefore, it says Rabbi Yosef, you see from this pasuk that obviously we can't say that Yibum applies in this situation because we call this whoever marries that woman after she's divorced from the first husband who doesn't want her because she's unfaithful as an Acher. And when the first husband dies without any children, you think we're going to require the brother to go ahead and marry this Risha, this wicked type of a woman that's unfaithful to her husbands? So that's why Risha says, we see from this passage, obviously there's no requirement of Yibam. Now, Abba Le Abayas, Abayas says to Rav Yosef, well, Elamiyat, if that's the case, that in the situation where if the first person would divorce her, where as the pasuk there in the context is talking about because he finds an erva stava, something unfaithful about her, then nisis la'achar umeis, then let's say she does get married to this achar you're calling him, because what are you doing marrying this person, that this woman that's being divorced because she's engaged in arayas? So let's say that then that other person goes and he dies. But lo yibanim without any children, so the halacha should be lo yitisyabim, so that other new, the second husband, when he dies without any children, his brother shouldn't do yibam, because that kasav karoi achar, the pasuk calls him achar. In other words, the yavam of the second husband should also be called, quote, achar, like a someone else, like someone inferior of character. Because he's also not going to be the same as the first husband if he goes and he marries her. So how can you say, we're not excluding from this pasuk, when the second man dies without any children, that his brother doesn't do yibum? Why? He would be going ahead and marrying, just like you say for the first husband who dies without any children, that we don't require yibum for him. Why then, when the second guy marries her, we also should not require Yibam for that second brother because he's going to marry this Rasha? So on that, Rav Yosef answers, no. Gabi dahai miyam, that regarding the Acher, the second husband, his brother, b'shem toiv havakayma, that we could say that she did tshuva, she had a good name. She didn't do anything unfaithful when she had married this second guy. And therefore, we wouldn't be calling the yavam of that second husband as an achar, because only someone that marries a woman when she's widowed or divorced from that husband that she had been married to and been unfaithful, and then you marry her, well, then you're an achar. Then that's an inferior characteristic that you have. What are you doing taking this woman? But if she had already married this other person, and then he does without any children, but during that marriage, she had a good name, then there's no problem about requiring his brother to do Yibam, and therefore only excluding, says Rav Yosef, from this pasuk, when the Saita herself, when the woman who's unfaithful in this marriage, in this union, then to make the brother do Yibam is definitely, doesn't make sense, and therefore there's no Yibam, but there's still Chalitza, because there's still Halacha of Zika, and that's why she's chaletzes b'loy misabemes. Now the Gemara says that Rav Amar, he gives a different interpretation for this halacha of the Mishnah, that why is it that b'loy misabemes? Why is it that the brother of the husband who died without any children, who his wife had been unfaithful to him, that the Yavim doesn't do Yibam? So he says it's a kavuchemer. Says you could figure it out from logic that would require that. Why? Because im nesra, if that she became forbidden when she secluded with this other man, which is the halacha of Safek Saita, b'mutrula, she became forbidden now, who up until now she had been permitted to, which was her husband. Because now the marriage is in ruin because she's forbidden to him. That's the halacha of Safek Saita. So says Rava, so therefore b'asrula. So then the Yavama, meaning her Yavam, who up until now, when she was married to her husband, was always forbidden, like Kalshikin, isn't it a kav v'chaymer that now when we say that the first marriage went sour and that even the husband that was married to her is forbidden to her, so therefore the Yavam, who only has his rights in the Yavama through the marriage of his brother, and that when his brother dies without any children, he takes that over, for sure he's going to be forbidden, where even during the marriage he was forbidden to her. So that's what Rava says, now like Rav Yosef, who was basing on this pasuk where we had three interpretations for that. Rather, Rava says it's based on a kav v'chaymer that if to the husband she's forbidden, then definitely to the yavam. Now that I'm like Abai asks him the interpretation of Rava. He says, wait, Elmiata, if there is this logic, this kav v'chaymer that you're saying, then take the following case. Kohen Gadol shekidish es almana. If a high priest, a Kohen Gadol, gets engaged to a widow who she's forbidden to him, a Kohen Gadol is forbidden to marry, has to be just a besula. Umeis, and then the Kohen Gadol dies without any children. V'yesh le'ach Kohen Hedyu, now his brother, is a regular Kohen, not a Kohen Gadol, who is permitted to marry an almana. So the halacha should be, loitis yabim, the yavim should not be allowed to do yibim because of this kav v'chaymer. Why? Im nesra b'mutr la, if the almana, this woman, is forbidden to the one that she's permitted to, which is the husband, which shortly the Gemara is going to address this problem and saying, what do you mean? What do you mean nesra? It's not nesra. She always was forbidden to him, meaning from the inception of that engagement. And what do you mean, mutrala? There's no mutrala. So it's not nesra and it's not mutrala. But that's how the Abai is asking the question. If when a Kohen Gadol gets engaged to Almana, and then he dies without any children, if she's forbidden to the one that's permitted to her, which is her husband, Sabasla Kalshkin, so isn't a kav v'chaymer that the Yavam, who's only coming, taking over the brother who's the Kohen Gadol's rights in this woman, for sure, who during that engagement was forbidden because it was his brother's kala, that for sure he should be forbidden. So how can you say that in that case that he should be able to do yibam? So that the Gemara answers, Nesra? What do you mean that? How can you say the same criterion of Rabba's kal v'chaymer? Here's not a case that she became Nesra. Hasir v'kaima, she was always forbidden. Moreover, Mutrala, that she was the one who she was permitted to, she became forbidden to? What are you talking about? Asalahu. She was always forbidden to the Kohen Gadol. That was a marriage in sin. It was never allowed. So then, therefore, that wouldn't apply as a kav v'chaymer to then forbid the Yavam, because it wouldn't be based on creating an Isser and who she was permitted to. And maybe the Yavam, the Kohen Hedrit, could go ahead and do Yibam to an Amana who he's permitted to. So, rather, the Gemara explains, now what Abaye's question is as follows. A different case. Eishes Kohen Shenensa, regarding the wife of a Kohen that was violated, where actually the halacha is, although it was against her will, she becomes forbidden to her husband, and because that's the halacha, that a wife of a Kohen becomes forbidden to him even if she was nenes, even if she was forcibly violated. Now, however, that does stand in contrast to the wife of a non-Kohen, who, if she was violated, if she was nenes, she would be permitted, as the Pasuk says in Bamidbar Parakeh, where it says that if a man was took her, even though she's married to someone else, and it says v'hilo nitfasa, and she wasn't grabbed, she wasn't forced, then she's going to be forbidden, and that's the whole problem of HS ish. But if the inference is, if she was nitfas, if she was forcibly violated, then she's still permitted to her husband. Now, moreover, from the fact that it says v'hilo nitfasa, it says that that's an exclusionary criterion to say that only that there is actually a different woman, that even if she was nitfas, even if she was nenas, she was forced, she is going to be forbidden, which that's the case of Eishes Kohen. Although it was an Oynes, she's going to be forbidden. Now, therefore, that is what Abaye asks. So regarding the wife of a Kohen that gets violated, umeis, and then the husband dies. V'yesh le'ach, now he has a brother, a paternal brother, meaning from the same father, who is a chalal. A chalal is someone that's born to his father, the Kohen, in a marriage in sin. For example, let's say his father, Kohen, marries a grusha, a divorcee, who is forbidden for a Kohen to marry such a woman. So the child becomes a chalal, becomes desecrated that from the halachas of kahuna. And actually such a person is permitted to marry women that are generally forbidden to kahanim. So for example, the case of an anusa, where this guy's brother who died without any children, his wife was raped, so he's actually permitted in marriage in such a woman. Whereas the pasuk says regarding kahanim that marry psulois, for example, a kohen hedyot, his father who married a grusha, it says b'lichal zaroi. That because then what's going to happen is that your children are going to be chalalim. So obviously, so if his child is a chalal, so he's actually permitted in his brother's wife who's nanusa. Now, and that is what Abaya asks, that loitis yabim, but he shouldn't be able to do yibim based on this kavachayma. Why? Because im nesra, if with this bia that the woman had when she was violated, she became forbidden to her husband, who was b'mutr la, who actually up until now, she was married as a regular wife, was permitted to him. So if so, says Abaya, then b'asr la, regarding the haryavam, who was forbidden to her at the time that she was violated by this other man, it's actually his brother's wife, so like kol shekein, isn't it a kol shekein that she should be forbidden to him based on the brother's marriage? And that is that because the whole permissibility of the yavam to his brother is based on the marriage of his brother. So if b'mutrullah, she became asr when she was violated by this other man, so isn't it a kavo chaymer that she should be forbidden to her asrullah, who is the yavam, who only comes through the conduit of his brother's marriage? Now, but we know the halacha is that in such a case, the chalal, who is actually permitted in those women that are forbidden to kahanim, is permitted. But why? The kavuchayim that Rav is saying, to answer the halach of our Mishnah, why there's no yibim by the suffix site, should apply in this case too. So now the Gemara answers, Einis b'Yisrael Mishra Shari. Fundamentally, this is different, because the case of rape is actually, when there's a wife that's nenas, is actually permitted if the husband is a non-kohen. Now, regarding this chalal, there is no iser. In other words, for the chalal, the brother, the yavam, it's totally permitted. And therefore, there's no kal v'chaymer. Because you can't say, oh, what do you mean? The one that was always mutter the husband, now she's aser. So the one that was aser to, isn't it a kal v'chaymer that's going to be aser? It's not true. It wasn't aser. Meaning, what's not aser? What made it aser to the husband, which was the oinus, does not make it aser to the brother. Because the brother, although he's a kain, but he's a kain chal, is like a Yisrael, who for him, a wife, being nenis, doesn't make it aser. Now, however, that doesn't contradict Rava's kavachimer, where if, let's say, she was mizan the beratzin, which is the case we're talking about in our mission of a suffix later, where she willingly went and was unfaithful, where there the husband and his brother, the yavam, are equal in that iser. If it would be any one of their wives, that would make it forbidden to them, that's a kavachimer, because since the yavam is only coming from the strength of his brother's marriage, which is what creates the zika, the bond of yibim in the first place. So if regarding the husband, who up until now was permitted to be married to this woman, his wife, she becomes forbidden based on the halacha of Savik Saita, so kavachimer for the yavam was only coming through that, of course, if his wife was unfaithful, beratzin would also make it forbidden to him. That's why the halacha is, if for the husband it's aser, says Rabbi, the kavachimer is saying, for sure, for the yavam it's going to be aser, and that's why there's no halacha of yibim, but there's still going to be the halacha of chalitza, as we said in the previous daf, where Rabbi Yisrael had addressed that, yes, even if it's forbidden to the husband, but he has to go ahead and divorce her through a get, so too with the yavam, he has the same halacha, he can't do yibim, but he has to divorce her with chalitza. Now the Gemara continues with the second Mishnah in this Masechta, which continues on the theme of the first Mishnah, which we mentioned regarding the Safek Saita, the suspected adulterous woman that we said that there's three things she becomes forbidden in, which is Asa Labal, Asa Laboil, and she becomes Asa Latruma. Now, that's out of doubt until she drinks the May Saita waters, which will then verify if she really was Tameh or not, and if she wasn't, if she was Tyra, then she could continue eating Truma. However, our Mishnah says, Ve'elu Asurais Melech B'Truma, these women become totally forbidden from partaking from Truma if she's married to a Kohen, which are related to this context of a woman that possibly was unfaithful with another man. So the Mishnah says, Hoy meris tamia nilach. If the woman says to her husband, look, I was defiled, I was unfaithful in the marriage with you, with another man. Now, Taisa actually points out that at the end of Masechtas Nedarim of Tzadi of Mebeis, The Gemara brings there from Rav Sheshes, who says that actually if a woman just comes up to her husband and says, Tameh Anilach, that actually she does continue eating truma. She does not become forbidden to her husband because we suspect that she's actually doing it for a different reason and that she actually wants to get out of the marriage and go ahead with a different man. So actually, Tesis explains, and he says, the Yerushalmi says the same idea, is that when the woman is telling her husband, Tameh Anilach, it's actually talking about that there was already Kino, he had warned her regarding this man, and there was Stira, that she had already been secluded with him. So there's already reclaim Ladavid, there's already leanings for us to tell us that she was defiled. So therefore, if she comes and she admits and she says Tameh Anilach, she's actually going to be believed and she's going to be forbidden to partake from Truma anymore. Another case is, Vishabo Edim Shitameh. If witnesses come and say that she was defiled, so she's obviously not just a suffix Saita, she's a definite woman that was unfaithful, and therefore she's forbidden to partake from Truma. Or Vahimeris Eini Shaisif. The woman says, look, she doesn't say that she's tahar. She says, I'm not drinking the Meisaita waters. So then she's losing that option of verifying her tahara. And although she doesn't go through the procedure, but she's forbidden to partake from Truma anymore. Or Vishabala in the Roitz Lashkois. Or if the husband doesn't want her to drink the Meisaita waters, he has that option. It's his volition. And if he refuses to take her through this process, then again, although she doesn't go through that, but she's forbidden to partake from Truma, where it's only a Ashes kind, that's a Ksheira, that's permitted to partake from Truma. But here, the only way she would be able to go back to that after Kinan Stira would be if she drinks, and now if he doesn't want her to give her a drink, she's forbidden forever to partake of the Truma. And another case is B'Shabala Ba'al Lebaderech, or we're on their way up to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, where he's taking her to have a drink in the Beis HaMikdash from the Meisaita waters. On the way, he goes and he has bia with her, the suffix Saita that he's suspected from having had adulterous affair with another man, where there the halacha actually is that the water is not going to inspect her anymore. Whereas the Gemara tells us later on, the Chav Chesem and Aleph, Pasuk says that if the husband goes through this whole procedure by taking his wife to the Beis HaMikdash, says, V'nikoha Ishma'av, and then the man will be purified from sin. Which the Gemara there learns is that when the husband is purified from sin, what does that mean? Meaning to say that after she became forbidden to him, because if she had an affair with another man, then she's actually forbidden to the husband. So on that is only if he doesn't go ahead and have beer with her after that. Then it's going to be like the Pasuk says, that Ha'isha hi tisa savanya, that the woman's going to carry her own sin. But if the man himself is not cleansed from sin, where he went and he had beer, he had cohabitation with his wife that's forbidden to him, then actually the ward is not going to go to an inspector anymore, and therefore she's going to be forbidden forever for have truma if he had beer with her, because again, you can't go through the procedure of the Meisaita to ever have that opportunity of her being permitted in her husband's truma. Now, Amrav Amram, he says, Ha milsa amalam Rav Sheshes, the following halach I'm going to tell you Rav Sheshes told us, the anhirlan einen, and he lit up our eyes, in other words, he brought a proof to his words, mimas nitin from our Mishnah. It's the following halacha. Rav Sheshes said, Saita sheyesh lo edim mebininas hayam. If a suspected adulterous woman who was warned regarding this man, secluded with this man, but no one came, no witnesses of Tuma came to verify and said, we saw the cohabitation. But there are witnesses actually overseas. It just means to say that they're not here, but they're, even if they're very far away, who they saw the act of cohabitation, then the halacha is going to be in hamayim boit kenesa. The water, although we don't know anything better, it's not going to inspect her. My time, what's the reason? Because the amakra, like Rav Sheshes said, the pasuk says in Bamidbar, v'nistera behi nitma, if she's secluded with this man and she becomes defiled, ve'ed ein ba. Now the interpretation is the leka the yadaba. When does the halacha of suffix saita apply? When we say, okay, based on kinyan stira, okay, so we don't know. We just know you were secluded for the amount of time that you could have had cohabitation, actually hurrah. So then we take you up to the Beis HaMikdash and we do the test of the saita waters. But that's only if ve'ed ein ba. The leka the yadaba, meaning that no one knows about it. Lafukeha, but that excludes this case, says Rav Sheshes, because there are people that do know about it. They're just very far away, and therefore they're not coming to testify. Now, Rashi points out, although actually we had expounded this pasuk in the beginning of the Masechta, actually very differently. We said that when it says ve'ed ein ba, means to say, we learned the word aid means two. There's no two witnesses, but rather there's only one witness regarding that this one witness saw the Saita actually being Nitma. And it was regarding saying that she's considered a Saita Vadai. We consider it definitively as if she was defiled and that she actually doesn't drink anymore. So how are we learning over here that the Eid Ein Ba is qualifying the halach of Safik Saita to say that the Safik Saita of the water clarifying, verifying only works when Eid Ein Ba, when there's not even one witness? So on that, Rashi explains based on the halachic dictum of in mikra yotzim de pshuta. A pasuk will always maintain its literal translation. And therefore it's also expounded in this way, the Rav Sheish is taking it, that this says that regarding the halacha of kinur and stira, it's only if the eid ein ba, then is what the pasuk says over there, behavior ishas ishta, in the whole parasha that he'll bring you, and it, the waters will inspect her. But if yesh ba eid, if she does have a witness, even if they're b'medina siyam, we don't know about them, then the waters are not going to inspect her, and it's not going to do the test, it's not going to make the bloating in the stomach, etc., that it says there in the Torah. Now, on that says Rav Amram, that the aner lon einin mimasnitin, that Rav Sheish has then brought a proof to his opinion from our Mishnah. Now, Rashi clarifies, and the reason being is because although seemingly has a pasuk, it's not really a full-fledged proof, as we said, because really the interpretation of that pasuk is regarding the site of Vadai, who when there is one witness who is in front of us and said that I saw the act of defilement, that it actually tells us that she doesn't drink. It's a different halacha regarding site of Vadai, not site of Safik. So therefore, he brought a riot to Zalacha from our Mishnah. The Tani, like we learned as follows. The Mishnah says that one of the cases that we said that this woman will be Asru Alecha Betruma is Vishabola Eidim Shi Temeah. If witnesses came and they said that she was defiled, then that's it. There's nothing to talk about. She's going to be forever forbidden to partake from Truma, even if her husband is a Kayan. Now, on that, the Gemara, the Rav Sheish has proved this point. He says, the Asu Eidim Emas, the Halacha of our Mishnah. When did these witnesses come who testified and said that we saw her being that we saw that she was defiled? Ename and mikmei detishti, if it's before she ever drank the meisaita, well, zainahi. Obviously, she's a full-fledged zaina, a prostitute. She went and she was mezana with another man. We have Adam that said they saw it. Obviously, she's forbidden to partake of truma. And that actually is another case that the Mishnah already said, which is Homer's tamean. If the woman says and admits that I was defiled, two witnesses are not less than that, and they say, we saw she was tame. So of course, if she didn't drink from the water, so what would be the chiddush in that? Of course she's going to be forbidden to partake of truma. So obviously, says Rav Sheish, building up his proof, it's obviously talking about that even if she already drank from the meisaita waters, and that is what the chiddush of the Mishnah is saying, is that we don't consider these witnesses who are claiming that she was nitma as liars, in spite of the fact that the waters already inspected her, and she didn't bloat, she didn't bust, she didn't die, which was what usually happens when she was nitma. So, on that is what Rav Sheish explains. Iyamit b'shleima, if you say like me, that ein hamayim boitkin oisa, then when there are witnesses, wherever they are in the world, even the din seyam, that then the waters don't inspect her, they're not going to create all this bloating and everything else. So Shapra, so that makes sense why we don't consider these two witnesses as liars. And the reason being is because since there were witnesses who these people were that knew about it, so that's why the water didn't inspect her. That's why although she actually was unfaithful, it didn't create her with all the terrible consequences of what usually happens when you drink the meisaita if you were tummy. But ili iamri, but if you would say not like me, then mayim boitkin oisa, that the water inspects a woman in all situations. If, let's say, witnesses don't come to verify, so we only know of kinyan stira, and she drinks the saita waters, if she was unfaithful, that she's going to bloat and pop and die, well, then tigli misalim afraid this adi shakrininu, then it's difficult halach of our Mishnah. If, as we proved, the Mishnah must be talking about where the witnesses come after she had already drank, because if she didn't drink, then what's the chiddush? Of course she's going to be forbidden to partake of truma, she's a zayna, that is talking about after, well, if she drank and nothing happened to her, but you said that even if there are witnesses that know about it, the waters will still work and verify. So then if she didn't bloat and die, then it must be that these two witnesses are liars. Because if she wasn't it, well, then she should have had the waters inspect her and she would have died. So obviously it says Rav Sheish must be like me, and that the reason why the waters didn't inspect and that's why it doesn't contradict the witnesses is because actually those witnesses who had known about it, since they know about it, the waters don't inspect. Now that only Rav Sheish responded to Rav Sheish and said that there's no raya. No, loyalim aim lacha mayim baitkin. So truthfully, I would tell you and dispute your claim that even if other witnesses know about it, the warders will still inspect. If she was unfaithful, even if there's witnesses, she will have it will work the warder in the consequential type of drinking. Now, but I can tell you that the reason why she didn't bloat is because she has merits that are contingent and protect her from the consequences of the waterways. The Gemara says later on the Chof and Aleph, there's a halacha that schus is toilah b'mayim amarim, that although generally the waters should do that if a woman was unfaithful, if she has certain merits, it doesn't create those consequences. So that's why. But don't prove it's because of the witnesses that known about it. It could be they came after she drank. And the reason why she didn't blow up was not because the witnesses knew about it. It's rather because of schusim. And that's why it doesn't contradict them that she didn't blow up, because it was for a different reason. So the Gemara is b'may kamifaki. So what is Rav Sheshi and Rav Yosef arguing about? Why, if you'll prove from this halacha of our Mishnah, if Edom know about it, if that's going to create the bedikas amayim or not? So that the Gemara explains, the machlik is b'misnavna de Rebbe. It's regarding this halacha, where the Gemara says later on the Afchav Beis Mabeis, that regarding this woman that we just defined, that Rav Yosef spoke about, who has chosim, who she has merits, where it protects her from the consequences of the water, if that this concept of nisnavna happens to her. It's not like within the Mishnah later on, Chav Beis Mabeis, Rebbe Yoimer, he says, schus toilu b'mayim amarim. He says this idea that merits protect from these bitter waters, where that her stomach does not immediately blow up, but she definitely is not going to give birth from drinking the waters, which does happen if she's Tyra, and she's not going to get better from those waters. Ella misnavna. Says Rebbe that, look, she's not going to immediately blow up like a regular unfaithful woman, but if she has merit, she's going to start getting weaker by lachas, and she's going to continue deteriorating, and l'slef shehi mesa ba'isa misa. Ultimately, she will end up dying. It's just not going to be immediate. And she'll die with her stomach bloating and her thighs falling in. That's what's going to happen with the schusim that you have that's toilet. That's what Rebbe says. Now, that explains the Gemara, what the machlik is Rav Sheshi and Yosef is depends on. Where Rav Sheshi, he holds that bein le Rebbe u bein le Rabban. And that is, the Rabbana do not argue on Rebbe regarding his halacha. The only thing they argue in is regarding this that Rebbe said, that ultimately when she's going to die from the same death. It's just going to be a prolonged experience. It's not going to be the immediate type of death, which is pretty gruesome right away. It's going to take some time. And then and Rebbe said, but she's going to die from that type of death. On that, the Rabbanan dispute that. But regarding the concept of nisnavna, where it's a constant deteriorating, that they don't argue, and they hold that even someone that has a schus have a misnavna, is she's going to deteriorate. Now, therefore, Rebbe Yosef says that Rav Sheshi says, since this woman didn't have nisnavna, nothing happened to her, so obviously it can't be like Rav Yosef said that it's because of some merits that she had, because even merits, everybody, not just Rebbe, but even Rabbanan hold that nisnavna happens, and we don't see this woman deteriorating slowly. So obviously, since nothing happened to her, it's because the warders are not going to inspect her at all, must be because of the witnesses that know about it, who are later coming to testify, and that's why nothing happened, and that's why it doesn't contradict the witnesses who, if you're saying that she was tummy, well, why didn't anything happen to her? Oh, because we knew about it. That's why nothing happened to her. But it can be based on the concept of schusim, because Rav Sheshi learns that Rabbanan agreed to Rebbe in the concept of nisnavna, where it's not happening to this woman. The only dispute regarding, does she end up dying from that same type of death? But Rav Yosef Sava, he held that, no, it is fitting to be inspected, the waters to work on the woman, even if Edom know about it. Now, so if Edom know about it, so why didn't anything happen to her before the witnesses came when she drank the water? It's like he said, because of the schus, the merits, that's not creating the impact of the waters. Now, but what's with the fact that she's not even nisnavna, not even deteriorating? So that is Rav Yosef says, the Tana that we're talking about here is the Rabbanan, because the Rebbe have a misnavna. It's only according to Rebbe that it slowly deteriorates. The Rabbanan, lo have misnavna, he holds a Rabbanan dispute not only regarding the final death, but even regarding the slow deterioration, where when they say that schus is toila, they're not talking about nisnavna at all, because the Rabbanan hold that it doesn't have nisnavna at all. It's not because they agree to Rebbe on nisnavna. They don't address it because there is no element of nisnavna. And therefore, Rabbi Yisrael said, you could say that that's the Tana of our Mishnah, and therefore there's no proof, he says, to Rav Sheshi from our Mishnah. Because, again, he learns that Rabbanan dispute Nisnamna, that's why nothing happened, not only the final death, but even Nisnamna. So that's the Machlokes Rav Sheshes and Rav Yosef regarding that halacha, to define what's the halacha of our Mishnah. Why is it nothing happened to the woman before the witnesses came, after she drank the water, even though witnesses are coming in, we're not contradicting them, we believe the witnesses, is either because, like Rav Sheshes said, because since the witnesses knew about it, or like Rav Yosef says, no, it's because of the schus that's Taila, according to the Rabbanan, who's the town of our Mishnah, it's not only going to save from the final death in an immediate type of way, or even in that type of death, but it's even going to save from this nisnavna of this slow deterioration, which is not happening to this woman. Now, Masa Rav Shimi Bar Ashi. Rav Shimi Bar Ashi asks on this halacha of Rav Sheshes, from that same Mishnah that we just quoted before on the Chav Beis Man Beis. The beginning of that Mishnah says, Rav Shimon Oimer, he says, he disputes Rabbi, and he says, Ein schus toile b'mayim amarim. It's not true. There's no merits that can save and spare a person from these bitter waters. Meaning, if she was unfaithful, whatever it says in the Pasuk is going to happen to her. And he says a reason. Because if you would say and entertain this idea that merits will protect a woman from what the bitter waters happen, well then, you're going to be rejecting these waters, you're going to be disparaging it, you're going to be downplaying the threat of these waters to the women that have to drink those waters. In other words, the women that are these suffix sighters, who maybe were really unfaithful, and they're not going to be afraid to drink the waters. They're going to say, oh, you know what? Shalom alayhi nafshi, nothing's going to happen to me because I see women that I know they were unfaithful and nothing happened to them. Now, because they had schusim. So she's not going to be afraid and she's not going to admit that she was really tummy, and that's going to cause that Hashem's name is going to have to be erased in those waters. Now, we want to prevent that, but you're downplaying it because you're saying, oh, there are people that schusim are going to be tightless, says Rav Shimon. It doesn't make sense to say that. Moreover is, if it's really true, like you're saying, that schusim are taila, now you're spreading a bad name regarding the really pure women that weren't unfaithful, that drank the waters and nothing happened to them, because v'hein aymerim, people are going to say, ha, t'meis hayu, they really were unfaithful. But we know the halacha, merits can save you, and that's what it really is. So therefore, Reb Shimon says it can't be for those two reasons, and schusim are not toila, if she was unfaithful, even if she has many schusim, what it says in the pasuk, her stomach is going to blow up, her thigh is going to fall, and she's going to die. That's what Reb Shimon says. Now, asks Reb Shimon Bar Ashi, v'im isen, if it's true that if there are edim, like Reb Sheshes said, then the waters don't inspect her, well then the same thing should apply over here, where if yeshla edim b'nei nesayam, if let's say this woman has witnesses overseas, now, if you're saying there is such a halacha that if there's edim elsewhere, nothing's going to happen to her, you're spreading rumors now about really pure women that drank and nothing happened to them, because still the same thing is going to apply. That, in other words, the same reason why Reb Shimon said you can't say schusis toila, that meaning to say that there's some other reason. Can there be another reason why a woman's not going to have the consequences of the water? Reb Shimon said, no, there can't be another reason. Because if there were another reason, then people are going to start spreading rumors about the woman that's really tarred, say, of course you're tarred because of those other reasons. He said, must be, there has to be the one denominator is only if she was mezana or not. But according to Rav Sheshes, there is another variable, and that is, nothing happens to the woman if there are witnesses that know about it. So v'hein armin, people are going to say, tamei, so you really were tamei, elishyesh len edim minisayam, it's just that they have witnesses overseas. So according to that, that's a difficulty for Rav Sheshes, because according to Rav Sheshes, there is another variable that says that you are not going to be nivdak. So now the Gemara answers, L'Rab Shimon Kamrat, you're quoting Rab Shimon to ask on Rav Sheshes? L'Rab Shimon, you're right. Midischus Laitalia, according to his interpretation, from the fact that merits don't work, so, and again, that's the reason is because of this reason, because of the rumors that people are going to spread about the women that are really tired. So, Edim Nami Laitalia, you're right. Regarding witnesses, Rab Shimon would agree that also wouldn't work, and even if there are witnesses, it's not going to protect. But says Rav Sheshes, I wasn't going in Rav Shimon. I was going in those who hold that schus is taila. Then the same thing is also the same concept that we have. If there are eidim that know about it, it's also going to be taila. In other words, nothing's going to happen to her. But you're right, Rav Shimon, who disputes it based on that theory. Actually, we'll see at the end of the daf that Rav Shimon does agree regarding eidim. That's based on psukim. But for now, the Gemara assumes that, to answer for Rav Sheshes, that you're right. The same thing that we can't say that another variable is because it's schusim, it also can't be because of eidim. Now, Mosav Rav asks now, also from that Mishnah Daf Chav Beis, The Mishnah there discusses ve'elu sheminchei sein, and these women who, regarding what's called the minchas kinois, which is like the word of kina that it says, the ruach kina that goes over the husband who warns his wife regarding secluding with this man, which is a tenth of an eif, a certain measurement of barley flour, which is what the woman has to bring when she goes through the procedures of the savek saita, besides drinking the mei saita to verify whether she nitma or not. So then she also brings this mincha of this aseris eif of kemech sa'ir. So that, the Mishnah says, that these women, their flour offerings are nisrafis. They get burnt, meaning below on what's called the Beis Hadeshen, which is where the ashes are put, meaning because they're not fit to be burnt and brought as a sacrifice on the altar, it's on the Mizbeach itself. And moreover, that they can't be redeemed and to then be deconsecrated and be considered as chulin. They're in a situation where they were already sanctified. And moreover, but now you can't bring them anymore, as we'll see. So therefore, they just have to be burnt on the place where the ashes are brought. Now, what are these types of cases? So we continue on to Amud Beis. For example, a meris temeani. If a woman says, I really was defiled. In other words, where she admitted to the courts regarding what she had done wrong. And the reason being, as we see later on the Mishnah of Zion, that it says that they would scare her. They would continuously induce her to finally admit her guilt. And through the procedure, she goes, you're right. I really had an extramarital affair. So again, so therefore that mincha, you can't bring it anymore because it's only brought for a Slavic Saita. We know that she's a definite Saita, Saita Vade. So you got to go ahead and you burn it on the base of Desh. Another case is v'shebolo edim shitimeya. And if witnesses come and they say, we saw that she was defiled, but forget about it. There's no Slavic Saita. There's no drinking of the waters. It's just to verify. We have two witnesses. We already know that she was nitma. So the mincha, the flower offering is also, is burnt on the bottom of the floor of the Mizbeach. Now, on that, the Gemara says, the Asu Edim Emas. When did these witnesses who said she was Nitma, when did they come? And that is, Ilema b'mikmei diktiktish. If it was before the flour offering was sanctified in the Kli Sharis, in the sanctified vessels that are used in the service of the Karbanos, if it wasn't yet sanctified in that vessel, well then, tepik l'chulin. Then actually you should be allowed to redeem that flour offering because it wasn't yet what's called the Kedushas HaGuf. The flour didn't get a physical sanctity. It's only what's called Kedushas Peh. It was just orally sanctified. Now, the halacha is all flour offerings could be redeemed as long as they weren't yet sanctified in the vessel. So, El Labas the Kaddish, or rather, must be talking about that it was already sanctified in the Kli Sharis. Where the halacha is that the Kli Sharis sanctify all those flour offerings that are fit to be there, meaning to be brought as a carbon, where then they can't go out and be deconsecrated anymore for chulin, as the pasuk says, kol hanegeya behem yikdash, whatever touches the sanctified vessels of the Beis HaMikdash becomes sanctified, which is something that's fit to be a carbon. Now, moreover, you can't go ahead and bring these menachos as a carbon because it's only brought for the intention of this service of the Sufik Saita to inspect her, and now she's already baduk, we already verified what she is, that she is a Saita Vadai. Now, moreover, neither can you bring that flower offering as a nedava, as a donation to the Beis HaMikdash, because it's not fit to bring as a carbon, because a flower offering of barley is only for the Saita and for the carbon Omer, which on the second day of Pesach, and therefore you can't bring it as a donation, which would only be if it was, let's say, made out of wheat flour. So therefore, it has to be burnt. That's the halacha. So now the Gemara concludes its proof. Now, if you say that the water inspects, in other words, if the woman drank from the mei saita, from the saita waters, until the witnesses didn't come, that it will inspect her. Sa'ama, we see that at the time when the mincha, when the flour offering was put into the vessel, it was fit for the klesharis. In other words, because at that time, bas mikdash mikravi, it was valid to be sanctified and to be brought as a carbon, because at that moment that it was put before the witnesses came, we had that doubt, meaning which is the same as every mincha saita, where we don't know if she was nitmo or not. So therefore, v'chi kaddish mi'ikar, so therefore, originally when it was sanctified in that vessel, in the kli sharis, shaba kaddish, it was definitely valid as a sanctification. So umshamachi, and that would be the reason why that even when the witnesses come, or when they come, that it becomes invalid from being brought as a carbon, what's called mikan laba, from here on, and it doesn't go out to chulin, because it was kaddish, and something that's kaddish can never then go out to chulin, but it can't be brought as a carbon now either because we know that she's a definite saita. We don't need it for the procedures of a specific saita. So that's why minchas and nisrafa. So that's why the flower offering would get burnt. But eli iyamid. But if you say like Reb Sheshes that ein hamayin boit kenaisa, the waters don't inspect her. In other words, it wasn't. We didn't know about it, but retroactively we will know about it. That really the waters weren't there. The whole procedure of the suffix saita really wasn't valid because there were Edom that knew about it. Now, we didn't know about it, so we went through with it. But now that we know that there were witnesses, it wasn't fit to be a mincha in the first place. So tigli milsulam afrei, so asks the Gemara, so retroactively should be revealed the chikadosh mikar, that when originally it was sanctified in the kli sharis, bitta'us kadosh, that essentially it was sanctified in error because it wasn't fit to be sanctified in the kli sharis. Because Kli Sharis only sanctifies what's fit for it, as the Gemara says in Masechet Zevachim Daf Pei Vav Min Aleph. So therefore, asked the Gemara v'tei b'gluchul, in this flower offering of this woman who had witnesses who testified after she already drank the Saita waters, should actually go out to Chulin even without being redeemed. Because what comes out retroactively is that even this, the oral sanctification, and most definitely the sanctification of the vessel, was all in error. We thought she needed a flower offering, but it's not true. She was never a suffix saita. In other words, she never was eligible for the procedures of the warders inspecting her because there were witnesses somewhere that knew about it. And the halacha is hektish betois, ain't a hektish. An erroneous sanctification doesn't make it hektish. So why does the Mishnah say that it has to be burnt on the bottom? And that would only be if it was kaddish. But according to Rav Sheshet's interpretation, it essentially never was kaddish. So therefore, why is it burnt? It should go out l'chulim. So on that, Rabbi Yehuda Midiskarta, he answers for Rav Sheshes from this question of Rav. He says, "Kegoin shezinsa ba'azar." The Mishnah there on Nafchav Beis is talking about that she actually was mezana in the courtyard of the Beis Hamikdash after the mincha was already sanctified in the vessel. Now it's regarding that znus that happened when she was already a suffix saita and she already was going through the procedures in the courtyard after it was already sanctified. She was mezana with some other with someone over there. Witnesses came and said, we saw her in the Azor being Mezana. And they weren't coming regarding the Tumah of the first seclusion she had, which started this whole thing in the first place, why she was in the Azor in the first place. So therefore, actually, the Chikadosh Mikar, when it was already, when this flower offering was originally sanctified in the vessel, Shapar Kadosh, it was appropriately sanctified because it was something that was valid to be sanctified and brought as a carbon, because actually that's Stira, that seclusion she had with that first man, actually there were no witnesses for. What do you mean there's no witnesses? Aren't we saying that there are witnesses that come? Oh, they're coming for something else. This woman is a problem woman. In the Azara, after it was already sanctified, she went and was Mezana with someone else. It's regarding that witnesses come and say, oh, forget about it. You don't have to go through the whole procedure. And that's why the milch is going to be burnt, because she was Mezana with someone else. So anyway, she's a Saita Vada. But the first time she was secluded, which is which was only thing that was at the time that the mincha was sanctified, was a stira, a seclusion that there were no witnesses for, and therefore that's why it was a valid kedusha, and that's why it is going to be burnt, and it's not going to say retroactively, because there is no retroactive on the first stira. There were no edim. The edim are for a separate act of business that she had in the courtyard itself. Now, on this resolution of Rabbi Yehuda Midiskarta, Maskelar of Mashasha, he asks, but how can that be a conceptualization that the woman, the Saita, they're bringing her up and there's a whole procedure that, but the young Kahanim are escorting her to go through all the procedures. How could she have been secluded for enough time to be Mezana with another man when all the young Kahanim are escorting her for all the procedures of the Suffolk Saita? So that the Gemara answer is, you're right. The young Kahanim, those young Kahanim boys, they're actually the ones that was Mezana with her, and therefore it's possible that she was Mezana in Dazar. Or Rav Ashi, I mean, gives a different interpretation. He says, Kigun she nitzrucha lenikveha, where she had to relieve herself. So they left her, and she went, instead of going out and relieve herself, she went and she was Mezana with a man. And the reason being is because the Atu Pirche Kuhuna, because do you think these young Kahanim that are escorting her, Bekipa on her head covering Talula, that they're hanging from her? In other words, you think they don't let go of her for a second? She says she has to go relieve herself to the ladies' room, so they let her go, and instead of going there, she goes somewhere else, and she's Mezana. Therefore, it is conceptually possible that she was Mezana, and again, it's on that later's nus that the Edom came, and therefore, it's not a challenge to Rav Sheshes. Now, Rav Papa, he says, La'ilim kedamina mikar. He says, actually, we could resolve this difficulty from Rav on Rav Sheshes from that Mishnah the way we originally wanted to say, which was that it's actually that the witnesses were coming on the tumma of the original stira, the original seclusion that she had with that man, and still it's not difficult to Rav Sheshes. Why? Because Udika Amrit, this that you said, that, wait a second, since it wasn't originally fit for sanctification, you asked that tepik lechulam. You asked that, so let the flower offering go out and be deconsecrated because originally it wasn't even fit to be a carbon in the first place. So on that answers Rav Papa, you're right. Biblically, midiraisa, it goes out to chulam. But midrabanan, rabbinically, is why it gets burnt. And the reason being is because not everyone is proficient in the halachas to know that the reason why this mincha was really never kaddish was because there were witnesses that knew about it, and that's why it wasn't fit to be kaddish in the first place. And therefore, gezeira shemayyemru might see, and so it's a rabbinic decree that maybe people are going to say, oh, that I saw that they took out something that was sanctified, mikli sharis, from a sanctified vessel, l'chel, to a mundane purpose. So since people are not going to know, they're going to say, wait a second, I saw mincha saita that they went, and I saw later on they were using it for mundane purposes. So because of that rabbinic concern, they said that rabbinically we're going to make it be burned, because people are not going to realize that it was only because of the fact that there were Eden that knew about it, and therefore was never kaddish in the first place, and that's why you could use v'chulin. So it's for that rabbinic purpose, and therefore it's not difficult for Rav Sheshes. You're right, biblically Rav Sheshes is correct, and therefore you should be allowed to use a v'chulin. Why does the Mishnah say that it's going to be burned? It's for rabbinic concern, so people shouldn't say that mitzim mikli sharis l'chol. So that's the different approaches to answer the question from Rav on Rav Sheshes, either like we said before, that it's on a later, like Rav Miskata said, a later's nus that they were testifying, but the original stira actually had no edim, and therefore it was fit to be sanctified, and that's why it's burnt and not go out the chulin, or like Rav Papa just said, because of this rabbinic gezeira, that's why it gets burnt. Now, in this resolution of Rav Papa, for the question of Rav on Rav Sheshes, Masa Rav Mari. Rav Mari asks from the following brisa, which the part of this is in that Mishnah Daf Chav Beis, where the brisa says as follows: Nitmas minchasa actually kitcha bekli. If her mincha became tamei until it wasn't yet sanctified in a vessel, so it only had kedushas peh and not kedushas aguf, so harihi kakala manachis. So it's like all flower offerings, where if they become tamei before they were sanctified in the vessel, v'tipada, and therefore it could be redeemed. And then with the money that it gets redeemed with, you can go ahead and purchase another mincha. Now, mishakitcha bekli, however, if it was already sanctified in the vessel and then it became tameh, so it's something of kedushas haguf that becomes tameh, so harei kakala manachis v'tisar. Therefore, it has halacha like all flower offerings, where if it becomes tameh after it's already sanctified, you can't go ahead and redeem it. It has to go ahead and it's burnt. Now, kadosh hakoymitz. Let's say there's in the procedure of a flower offering, there's a fistful that's called a kmita that's taken, and that fistful, well, first is taken from the big pile of that flour and it's put into a kli sharis, into one of the sanctified vessels in the Beis HaMikdash, and that sanctifies the kmita itself. Whereas Rashi explains, although we're talking about that all of the flour was already in a sanctified vessel, the halacha is that there's four different avodas that are done by a regular carbon, which is like an animal that you slaughter and you do the avoda with the blood. A similar parallel process is done with a flour offering, where the fistful, the kemitza, where you take from a kli sharis that has all the flour in, parallels what slaughtering does for an animal, where the knife of the kli sharis sanctifies the blood. That's what the parallel of taking the flour of the kemitza is. Putting it into a sanctified vessel of the kemitza, that it parallels the receiving of the blood in the kli sharis. Then transporting it, what's called halacha, by the flour offering parallels that, where you transport it by the blood of an animal offering. And then the burning of the fistful on the mizbeach parallels the throwing of the blood, called the zrika, of an animal. So the case that we're discussing over here is that you had already sanctified, which is what would you consider kabbalas adam by an animal, you already took that fistful of what's going to be burnt on the mizbeach of the flour offering, and that was already sanctified in the vessel. Now, however, they didn't get a chance yet to burn it on the Mizbeach, and before they got a chance, the husband died. Now, therefore, as Rashi explains, she's not going to drink anymore the Meisaita, because the whole purpose of the Meisait is to see if she's permitted to her husband or not. Now, once he's dead, there's no point of verification to see if she's permitted to him or not. Or let's say before they got a chance to burn that koimitz, which would be the conclusion of the avodah of this mincha, she died first. So says the Brisa, so therefore it's like all flour offerings where if there's an invalidating factor between the doing of the kemitza and the burning of that festival on the mizbeach, where then you go out and you burn it beneath the mizbeach, meaning it's not sacrificed on the mizbeach, rather it's burned beveis hadeshen. Now, karva koimitz. If let's say they already burned the fistful. They did the kmitza, put into kli sharis, they transported, and they already burnt on the mizbeach. But the kohen did again a chance yet, lechel shirayim, which is the other part of the service, where part of it is, so to speak, eaten on the mizbeach, it's burnt, and the other one is eaten by the kahanim. Now the kahanim didn't get a chance to eat the shirayim, the remaining flour, where before they got a chance to eat it, either he died or she died. So the Brisa says, so it's like all flour offerings, where if the avodah was already done, then they could eat the remnants. And the reason being is because the whole purpose of this minchas kenois of a saita was brought because of the situation of doubt, which was inherent, because we didn't know if she was mizan or not. Now, kipra, this flour offering has already atoned for Sveika for the situation of doubt, v'hochel, and it's already passed us. Now, Rashi points out that this kapara, atonement, doesn't really mean a kaparas oven. It's not atoning for any sins, neither is it a haskaras oven, a commemoration of a sin. Rather, it means to say it did the job it was supposed to do, meaning that when this flour offering was being brought, at the time that the fistful of the flour was sacrificed on the mizbeach, it was an appropriate thing that at that moment where she was drinking she would have drunk at that moment the meisaita to inspect her, so that was a valid part of the process, which is sacrificing the kaimitz part. Now, so since it was sacrificed in an appropriate way, so the remnants are eaten, even though ultimately now before it's eaten, she dies or he dies, where, okay, then obviously there's no point in going through the procedure, but the procedure was already done. Therefore, that doesn't invalidate unless there would be some type of invalidating factor in the mincha itself. If it would become tameh or something, then it would have to be burnt to the bottom. But since here it accomplished what it had to, although she dies now obviously if she's dead, there's no point in the saita process, but we already went through the process and they just didn't get a chance to eat it, so therefore the carbon was a kosher carbon, meaning this flour offering, and therefore then they could eat it. Now, the Brisa says, bolo edim shi tameya, but if witnesses come and say that she was defiled, where, as Rashi explains, is going back, meaning before the kaimitz was sacrificed, so minchas nisrafes, again, that invalidates the mincha, because now you can't go ahead and sacrifice the kaimitz, because it's obviously only for a procedure of safek saita, now she's definitely saita, so therefore the mincha is burnt on the bottom. Now, the main case that we want to ask the question over here is from this last case that the Gemara is quoting from the Brisa that says, nimso edim, but if, let's say, not to be confused with the previous cases, edim of saying that she was defiled, but if, let's say, our witnesses that had testified regarding her stira, her being secluded with this man, that they started this whole thing because the husband warned her, which is called kinoi, witnesses then verified, oh, we know she was secluded with this man. We can't say what happened behind closed doors, but she was secluded. Now, therefore, she's a subject saita, and she goes through the whole procedure that we're describing over here, bringing the mincha and so on, drinking the meisaita. Now, on that, the Brisa says, if, let's say, it turns out that those witnesses are found out to be zaymimin, which are false witnesses, they made up the whole thing. So then the Brisa says, minchasa chulin, turns out that her flour offering was chulin, was never consecrated, meaning there's no oral consecration of it, and neither is it not kedusha's kli, and there's not going to be any me'ilah, because the whole thing was one big mistake, it was one big error, she was never suffix saita, because the witnesses who created the halachic entity of stira were liars, they made up the whole thing. So there the Brisa says, so the mincha is chulin. Now one thing that is Rav Mori's question on Rav Papa, so we see that there is no rabbinic concern over here to say that we have to burn the mincha in this case, meaning when we find the Edom who had testified that started this whole saita process, that there was zemimin, we don't say that, oh, wait a second, people are going to say, I saw there was a real flour offering, it was already sanctified in the klisharis, and then I saw they used it for mundane purposes. you see that there obviously is no such concern, because then why would they say that nimtzo edim zayim in chas chulin? You would say it has to be burned because people are going to think you're taking from a kli sharis to chulin. So obviously says Rav Mari that when we said in that Mishnah that bola edim shei tameya, that when witnesses come and say this, which we just quoted the previous case in the Braisa, that in chas nisrafes, that a flower offering gets burnt, that must be biblically, and that is because it must be that it was able to be sanctified, meaning not like Rav Papa, who wanted to resolve the difficulty on Rav Sheshar. He wanted to say that no, of course midrashah, like Rav Sheshar says, it's not going to be kaddish, because since there were witnesses, so of course there was no real site of process to verify with the waters, because the waters are not going to work if there's witnesses, and therefore the mincha should really be chulin. Why is it being burned? That's rabbinic concern. Says Rav Mari, you can't say that. Obviously, you see that it's a biblical halacha that it gets burned. Not like you're saying rabbinic, because what your answer of rabbinic is not true from the next case that the Braisa quotes. We would see that there is no such rabbinic concern, where in the case of Edom Zayim, there should be the same concern, and yet they say that it's chulin and it's not burnt. So therefore, the difficulty of Rav comes back according to the resolution of Rav Papa to answer the question on Rav Sheshes. Nothing more says, no, Rav Mari's question is not difficult. Edom Zayim, comrade, you're asking from the case of Edom Zayim? Edom Zayman Kala Islahu. Everybody finds out that the whole thing was a farce. You remember that woman that they said that she was unfaithful? No, the people, they made up the whole story. And therefore, everyone's going to know, answers the Gemara, that it was a hektish betoz. And therefore, no one's going to come to the mistaken notion of thinking that you could take something that was niskadish beklisharis and go out lechulin. Because although there is the concern of, in the previous case, where if witnesses come and say that she's tameya, because not everyone's going to realize that that's that the fact that there were witnesses who knew about it, that's actually going to make it easier for her regarding the inspection of the water, and therefore there was no such case, which was like Rav Sheshes Halacha, there could be that rabbinically we're going to be concerned. But by Edom Zayim, everyone's going to know that it was Hekdesh B'Tuz, and therefore we have no reason to make a rabbinic decree over there and saying that it should be burnt. Now, after asking all these questions, Rav Sheshes, the Gemara actually says, Tanika Vaseid Rav Sheshes. We have a brice that supports this Halacha Rav Sheshes, that the warders will not inspect the saita if there are witnesses that know about that they had seen that she was defiled. But v'lav mitamei. But the brisa, although it supports his halacha, is not coming based on how he had used the pasuk of ve'ed ein ba. Because actually, as we said previously, that pasuk is not really talking about suffix saita. Rather, it's actually talking about a definite saita witness. Ve'ed ein ba, there's no two witnesses, but there's one witness. Rather, the brisa learns it out from a different pasuk. So the pasuk they bring is a pasuk about midbar that starts off by saying ve'im loydnit moha isha, and after a woman was not defiled and tahira, rather she is, as the pasuk says, tahira he, she's actually pure. So then the pasuk says, oh, v'nixa, then she's going to be cleansed from all this whole story. V'nizra zera, and she's actually going to have children now that's going to be blessed because of the water of the seita water that she's drinking. Now, the braisa here is explaining that really the pasuk should have written ve'im loy nitma, if she wasn't tamei, so then beniksa, then she's cleansed. What are these words v'tahirahi? If she's not tamei, she's obviously tahira. So rather, the braisa says it's being used to expound to say that if she's tahira, then it's going to be the end of the pasuk, the blessing of nizra zera, she's going to have children. But the three components of va, the vav of v'tahira, and the word tahira and he are all excluding different cases that although she's not going to have the inspection of the water, which is the case when she's Tameya, but since she's not really Tahira, she's not going to have the blessing that comes with the end of the Pasuk of Benizra Zerah, of having children because of this whole suspicion story. Where the Braisa says, it's only if because she's pure, but Veloy, and not if she was saved from the inspection, the consequential consequences, the what happens with her stomach and everything, because she yeshla edim ibnina sayam, and that is because if she has witnesses overseas that she was tummy, which that is going to save her from being inspected, which this price clearly supports of sheshes halacha, where although it's from a different pasuk, as the Gemara proved had pointed out, where we see that she's not going to get the water doing, but she's not going to get benizra zera because really she is tummy. And that's learned out from the word tahira, that it's only if she's tahira, but not in this case, which is really was nitma, it's just that the water's not going to process because there were witnesses that knew about it. Now, utahira, meaning the words in the pasuk is, it says utahirahi, that and she's tahira. The vav is also superfluous, That's coming to teach to exclude, that is, Voloisha Tolsalos Chus, where it's only because the reason why she's not getting the consequence of the water is because she's pure. And not if, let's say, it's because of some other merits that's avoiding the consequence of the water, where there the Pasuk didn't say that Benizra Zeh, that she's going to have children because of the water. And the extra word he, from Utahirahi, that she is tar, Veloi, and not, we're not talking about a woman that's saved from the consequences of the water. That is, if let's say her degrading acts were known by everybody, where Sheyisu v'yidnu ba moizreis b'levonim. That is, if she's the talk of the town, of the gossip corners, where even the women that are they're sewing by the light of the moon, where they're sitting and gossiping about this woman, such a woman, that's going to be excluded. The waters are not going to work for her. But, again, it's not going to create the blessing of an Nizra Zera, because the reason why is not because of that she was pure. It's rather for a different reason. And those are the things that's being excluded. But one thing that we see is that we support the halacha of Rav Sheshes from the exclusionary term, which is seemingly superfluous, of Tahira, which says that only such a woman is going to have Nizra Zera, but not Eidim Ibn Nitzayam, which obviously the Bryce is saying, like Rav Sheshes, that she's not going to be inspected. It's not going to work on such a woman. Now, based on this Bryce, the Gemara asks, but Reb Shimon, who we had quoted previously, that said that, no, he says later on the Mishnah Daf Chabez, he says, Chus can't be Taila. Merits can't save the water, the woman from the consequences of the water. Now, he said that the logic is because then people are going to spread rumors about those who are really Tairis. They're going to say, oh, it's not necessarily she was faithful. Maybe it's for some other reason. So they very disagreed. So now the Gemara asks, so Nehi Devav, so even if you're going to say that the Vav, which again, as we just quoted the Braisa, comes to exclude a woman that Schus will be Tailam, Loi Darsh. So obviously, okay, Reb Shimon's not darshening that because he actually says that there is no such halacha of Schus being Tailam. So you can't say that the Vav of Utahira is coming to exclude that such a woman who's being spared from the water will not get the blessing of Nizra Zera, because according to Reb Shimon, there is no such woman. No woman is spared because of some other merits. So you could say, okay, the pasuk is not difficult according to Reb Shimon because he doesn't expound the extra Vav. He doesn't feel that that's significant enough to make a drush out of that. But, for Ikka, the Gemara, as we continue to talk about Zayin and Aleph, there is Yeshla Edim Ebedina Sayam. There is the other drusha that's being learned out from the seemingly superfluous word Tahira, which is explicitly an extra word where you can't discount like an extra letter, like a Vav, where that's difficult according to Reb Shimon because you said there can't be any other reasons why a woman would come out clean from the water unless that she's pure. Because you said, if yes, then people are going to start spreading rumors about this Tahar woman to say it's for other reasons. Now the problem is, as the Brisa just proved, is the extra word Tahira, where tells us that, oh, but only Nizra Zera if she's really Tahar. But if she's being saved from the water for a different reason, which is because there are witnesses overseas, which again is the halacha of Rav Sheshes, on that, the Gemara asks, according to Reb Shimon, what's he going to do with this pasuk, which obviously is telling you that eight witnesses overseas are going to save the woman from the inspection? Well, then they're going to start spreading rumors about even the Tahrir's woman and say, ah, she's not really Tahrir. Probably people saw, they just went overseas and no one knows about it. So that's going to create the problem, which you want to avoid by the halacha of why schus doesn't work. So the Gemara answer is, lo yishchicha. It's not common. In other words, people are not going to entertain to suspect the woman by saying some far-fetched theorem, by saying that, oh, really, there probably were witnesses there and they went somewhere far away and that's when no one's coming to testify. No, if there were witnesses, they're probably around and they would have said something. So if schus doesn't work, schus is something that definitely people are going to say that everyone has some merits. So that would be a problem for the Tyrus. They would say, ah, oh, she really was Matama, just she had some merits. So on that is what the Gemara is answering for Reb Shimon, that no, if schusim don't work, it's highly likely that if the woman's coming out without any consequences of the water, that she was tar. Although, yes, there is the possibility of that maybe there were witnesses who are very far away and now we don't know of that and that's why she's being saved. People are not going to go speculate so far, and therefore it's not going to cause a problem of suspicion and of rumors about the water. Now, Rashi just points out one thing, although previously on Amman Alf, the Gemara had said for Reb Shimon, when we wanted an answer for Rav Sheshes, that from the fact that merits are not Taila, so to witness is not going to be Taila. That was only originally in the Gemara where we didn't know yet about this drasha from this Braisa, but once we know about this drasha from the Braisa, obviously it's an extra word, Taira, and Reb Shimon has to make that drasha, so he would agree and differentiate where, yes, he holds like the halacha of Rav Sheshes, where regarding witnesses knowing about it, it will spear the woman, in contrast to a schusim. And the difference is because that's not going to create problems of rumors for the woman, whereas schusim would create problems of rumors for the women that are really tahira.